Hi, Foxies. The episode you're trying to listen to is right around the corner, but first, we need your help. You may have noticed that there are no ads during The Fox and the Foxhound. We prefer this, being ad haters ourselves, but we need your help to keep it that way. If you love this show, please consider signing up as a patron at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We have Patreon tiers starting at just $1 a month. And not only will you get fun extra content and an unedited cut of every episode 2 days early, you'll be directly responsible for keeping the show going in all of its ad-free glory. Thanks to all of our existing patrons, past patrons, and hopefully future patrons. Enjoy the episode.
I could use maple syrup.
Ooh.
Coffee and bourbon. Sweeten it with maple syrup. Then do a tiny little bit of vegan half and half. And then sprinkle a cacao.
A cacao-less.
Roadcaster. Roadcaster. All roads lead to success. You're welcome, Roadcaster. You're welcome for that free bit of advertisement.
But road isn't spelled like road.
That's the whole thing, hon. Play on words.
Mm. Oh, that's good. That's extra
vanilla
cream. That'll slap you right in the face.
Slap your mama. That's what my stepdad Terry used to say when he'd see an attractive woman. He'd go, damn, she's strong. She'd make a puppy pull a freight train. Or he'd say she'd make a pit bull slap his mama.
That's terrible.
In your eyes, the light, the heat. Mm-mm-mm-mm. Fish food.
I have to test it.
Tom Brokaw. Pelican.
I have to test a sound effect real quick.
Oh, God. This is 60 minutes.
Okay.
Walter Cronkite. Tom Brokaw. Minnesota. Montana. Capybara.
Mm-mm.
Capybara.
Could you not?
Capybara.
Shall we not?
Fly in to ILM, bitches.
Well, I think you can probably hear me in those radio spots now because they wanted them done by the 15th, so.
I gotta clean these files up. Are you giving me a heavy sigh right now?
No. Send me the file. I can clean it up. What format's it in? WAV file?
Okay, I mean, that is an actual file.
It's a WAV file? Yeah, no problem. I've got Audition. I've got Adobe Audition. I'll go ahead and clean that up for you. It's no problem.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've got Dynamic Island, so I'll probably just do it on my phone.
Could you stop saying Dynamic Island? It's not what that means, like, at all.
Why don't you play Animal Crossing anymore?
I mean, I feel like I just kind of did everything that I could do.
Yeah.
In it, you know?
You maxed out the algorithm.
I kind of did.
I mean, I don't really think that's the way that you technically put it.
Al and the Go Rhythms. That's a band name. All right, okay. It's a lot of terracing. Quite a bit of terracing. Like, something's off with my gain or my pull. It's either my gain or my pull. Probably my output. Check. Are we?
You're way too far away from the microphone.
Are we analog in the second port? Can we make sure that we are HDMI analog in the Ethernet cable on the third port? Okay.
That is nonsense. That is literal, actual nonsense.
Are we running Dynamic Island on a are we running the Dynamic Island script right now? Are we running that script in the background? Okay, just want to make sure the mixer is picking everything up.
Want to know the two mics that I'm that are currently on my list?
Are they his and hers?
No, they're just like I would be deciding between them, but I'll probably add more to the list.
Contestant one.
The Neumann TLM-103.
There's Neumann that makes a better microphone than us.
That is a, what is it called? A large diaphragm condenser microphone.
I've met a few of those in my days.
The other one is the Sennheiser MGH416, which is a shotgun microphone with a super cardioid polar pattern.
He's stuck.
Oh, God.
I have a Sennheiser headset that I use at work.
Do you?
Yes.
Sennheiser makes an excellent microphone.
It's pretty good. The headset has a little, like the Bluetooth capability comes from a little chip that goes in the USB port.
Oh, yeah. That's you know like how my work keyboard
Yeah. does. It's like that, but it goes to the headset. And the headset rests on a stand that actually plugs in, but it charges it.
Oh, that's fancy.
So when I take the headset off, it's wireless, you know.
That's fancy.
It itself charges because you can turn up the volume and pause it and do all these things.
You can't, like, unfortunately, you can't really use wireless headphones for, like, this kind of thing, where you're, like, listening to the real feed of your microphone.
I mean, it sounds like Fisher-Price, my first Zoom.
It's not even the sound. It's just that they can't, you can't get an instantaneous.
Like, yeah, there's a delay.
Always.
It's the gain, probably.
It's not, it has nothing to do with gain, but okay. You're going to be so mad at what I ask you to do. But I think it's going to be really funny for what it's worth. Kitties.
Tell me when you want to start.
I am ready to begin.
And I'm glad I didn't know the way it all would end.
See, I thought you were
gonna, it all
no, I thought you were going to do.
I'm bringing Garth back again for like the third episode in a row.
Can we not? I thought you were going to say, and I had the time of my life.
Oh, yeah. Except you went positive and I went negative.
I hate that song. Did you know that about me?
Yes.
That I hate that song, like, a lot?
What about Hungry Eyes?
Hungry Eyes. It's marginally more tolerable.
What about Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind?
No. No. She's Like the Wind. I always think
you
of
also
them.
Don't like songs that are about, like, metaphor, or like similes or metaphors of women. Like,
I don't like songs that are
she's like a mountain, she's unpredictable like the ocean.
Okay, you first of all, like that. First of all, ick, woof, gross,
woof, woof, like woof. Ravis Lupin?
No, woof, like what a dog says, hun. There's no L, which when you say woof, there's no L anyway, but you know what I mean. No, I hate that, but what I really hate, just in general, like across the board in country music, is unnecessary metaphor. Like, just tell the story. It doesn't have to be this fucking convoluted, like, start at the end, fucking
but then it wouldn't
the
be
last 5 years
hun.
Style
That's a of tradition. A,
it's so annoying. I hate it. Like, I hate it a lot.
I know. I love it.
We could also, since this is our series wrap up discussion, or at least our first reading of the series wrap up discussion, we could also do a
what's that?
Green Day. I hope you had the time of your life.
Another turning point. I thought I can ride.
Yes. You know, that was like what everyone used for their graduation when that song was big.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an emotional song.
Yeah, it came like after I was out of high school, probably. So
you were like, care. Green Day, lame.
No, I was like, no, I didn't have the time of my life.
It actually sucked.
Yeah, it was terrible. Green Day was like one of the only good things about that time.
Dookie is a great album.
Oh, polarizing in the punk rock community at that time, too. When Dookie? I was a teenager.
To me, like, unequivocally
Green
great
Day.
Album.
Green Day's not punk.
Who cares? It's a great album.
Other people were like, Green Day is punk as fuck. You don't know what you're talking about.
I don't really care if they're punk or not. It's a great album.
It was good. It was so good.
It was really good.
It was like Dr. Dre's The Chronic. Oh.
Mm, sure. Ben Folds 5, Whatever and Every Man. One of my all-time favorite albums from beginning to end. Could you not, Kat? For fuck's sake. So, as I mentioned.
So, what are we doing?
This is our series wrap-up discussion where we're going to talk about Harry Potter, the series.
And we're going to wrap it.
No, we are not wrapping. We would be terrible at that. So we're not going to do any wrapping. This is wrap, W-R-A-P, wrap up. And we will be covering some topics. I have some surprises up my sleeve for
Seems
you.
Seems like a lot of pressure for a new,
it's a little bit new of Potter pressure.
Fan, you know?
We're going to get the real pressure-y stuff out of the way at the beginning, but why don't we remind our listeners about our schedule for the next couple of weeks? What is happening next week?
Next week.
Next week.
You asked for it. You got it.
Nobody asked for it.
We don't know how it will start, but we know how it will come out in the end. Introducing Hot Ones.
Hot Ones. This is your final call. When this episode drops, you'll have like maybe 2 or 3 more days max to send any questions that you feel may be appropriate for Hot Ones to jtbailey@gmail.com.
And we will, if you're not familiar with the famous YouTube series that we're ripping off.
Hot Ones.
Right. We will be eating probably chicken fried tofu.
Mm-hmm.
With varying degrees of hot sauce.
That will escalate as we go on.
Yes.
I am a huge wimp about spicy things, so I'm fucked. You're going to be fine because you eat spicy shit all the time.
I'm also trying to decide how dangerous I want to get for that number 10.
We need to do it up.
Yes.
Right. I mean, like, put me in the hospital. It's fine.
God. I think we've spent enough time in the hospital for 1 year.
That's a good point. And if you haven't seen Hot Ones, the types of questions are usually, typically it's related to the person who's the interviewee, like their work or their latest projects or whatever. But there are also some questions that are kind of sort of off the wall, really.
I think it's just to catch people off guard and make them have to concentrate through the pain.
Yes, exactly. So if you've not seen it, highly recommend. Just look up Hot Ones on YouTube and you will find my man Idris Elba did an episode. He was the hot one on Hot Ones, if you know what I mean.
And he had a hot wand.
I'm sure, yes. But there are hundreds of episodes. Jeff Goldblum, another one of my crushes.
Millie Bobby Brown, that
Millie
was a
Bobby
good
Brown,
one.
That was a really good one. That one's a recent one. Lizzo was also recently on Hot Ones. So anyway, we will be doing that. And it also will be filmed professionally by our friends who are professionals. And it's going to look real good, and we'll get it to you somehow. Probably put it on YouTube, on our YouTube channel that, like, I think has nothing on it.
This is Foxy's filming Foxhound.
Oh, my God. God help us.
It's folding in on itself, you know?
It is. The metaverse.
Oh, my God. The Dynamic Island?
You keep using that word. I do not think it means.
Please,
what do you
help.
Think it means?
I'm trapped on Dynamic Island.
And then the 2 following weeks after next week, we are going to be taking off so that, I mean, we're not going on vacation or anything. We just want to refresh our intros. If you haven't noticed, our intro is incredibly outdated. I'm aware. I just,
but
you know.
Both of those weeks, I will be dropping into the studio to spit bars.
So if by studio you mean our living room, then I would hope that you'll be dropping by the living room.
Dropping bars. Yeah, mad bars. Spitting. I'm going to be spitting
I really
bars.
Kind of like am getting the sense that you wish that we were rapping tonight.
We'll get there.
Will we? I hope we don't.
So what's on the docket?
Let's jump into this. So here's what's on the docket. Our first segment, I will reveal to you in a second. Our second segment are some discussion questions that we have both looked over. So Kevin has had a little bit of time to prepare these questions, but, you know, these are difficult questions that we'll be kind of freewheeling discussing. And then our final segment, we're going to have the Harry Potter Awards, the potties, if you will. That sounds terrible.
The potties.
The wandies, the magics. We've got to call it
the
something.
Goblets, the goblets?
I mean, we could call it the Foxies, I guess, but that is confusing with our listener base who are the Foxies. The Foxy Awards. Why not? The Foz. The Fa-la-la-la-las. And during the segment, The Foz, the Foxy Awards, we will be giving out some superlatives, some best of the series kind of moments,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So believe it or not, I think we are going to to handle our series-wide discussion in our normal kind of hour-ish. I don't plan on going beyond that.
We'll see how long-winded I get.
We'll see how long-winded you get, exactly. Yes. So our first segment, my dear husband, I hope you know that the plan is that this is funny, and the expectation is not that you're going to do well.
Oh, no.
Here's your challenge. Your mission, should you choose to accept it. We're going to do this a total of 7 times. You probably know where I'm going with this. You will have 1 minute to tell me the plot of each book.
I don't know the series by book.
But you are going to do your best. You'll remember that you'll have the title. I will
give
you the title.
People will stop listening to this podcast because they're going to say, he doesn't remember.
Honey.
Because I didn't wait for another book. I know. It's one big series to me.
I know. And that's okay. That's why this is fun.
Okay.
Okay. I do have a sound effect for the timer. The final 5 seconds will get louder and then there will be a bell. Right?
All right.
Okay. So just anything you can remember, go with the title. The title is going to tell you like everything you need to know.
Okay.
Also, you just saw Puffs, which is divided into 7 acts, basically.
Oh, and it's really fast. And it's also a lot very fast.
Okay. So the first book in the Harry Potter series is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. That would be the U.S. edition. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone would be the U.K. edition. So I'm going to give you a second to reflect on Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Think about the movie, too. It's a very decent
this
movie.
This is not helping me, all the things that you're saying.
Okay. And your 1 minute, would you like to just begin?
Yeah.
Your 1 minute starts right now.
We meet a little boy who is about to turn 11, and he lives with his aunt and uncle, and he lives underneath the stairs, and they're total dickheads, and his cousin's an asshole. And he kind of notices weird things about himself. Like, he goes to the zoo and he makes this snake come out that says, thanks. And then this guy, these letters start coming in through the mail and owls show up and all this stuff. And this giant guy knocks on the door and grabs this kid. Actually, something scary happens and the family moves to a rock in the ocean. And then this giant guy comes in and gives this kid a birthday cake and takes him back to a magic school. And then he goes to a magic school and he meets these friends. And then they suspect that there's like this special stone that's down in the basement of this school. And so they go looking for it and they meet a 3-headed dog and there's a flute or something like that. And something happens with the stone and then they're all friends. They get sorted into their houses and we kind of are introduced to Hogwarts.
Listen, with time remaining, I'm going to let this just, okay, that's the final 5 seconds, and then we're going to hear a very nice little ring. You did great. What are you talking about? You went like shot by shot of, you know, the very beginning.
That's the first book.
That's the first book. Some interesting points. I love that the sorting came at the end.
Right.
For bonus points that we're not keeping track of, what was the 3-headed dog's name?
Fluffy.
Yeah, see, you know more than you think you do, for God's sake. I think that was excellent. Honestly, great, great job. We also had the Mirror of Erised in the first book.
Really?
And that's how Harry like gets the stone, is that it's in his pocket.
This is like my entire life. Like, I don't remember any of my life until someone says, hey, Kev, remember that time we were at the beach and we saw the one-legged seagull? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. The lady was trying to help it. But I can't get there on my own.
So then why is your narrative that you don't remember anything about your life? Because that is not true.
I can't pull it out on my own.
I don't think anyone can.
But I can remember if someone else tells me.
I think that's normal. Okay. Book number 2.
Prisoner of Azkaban. Half-blood prince.
Nope. Neither one of those.
Goblet of Fire.
Not that one either. You've named like every book except the second one.
The student of torture. Bird of paradise.
Harry Potter and the Bird of Paradise. It's Harry Potter on
the
a job.
The Boy Who Lived.
No, there's not a book called The Boy Who Lived. Jesus Christ. The second book is Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Chamber of Secrets. I want you to think about this one. It sounds like you're not feeling good. You didn't feel good about the first one either. And look how well you did.
Really not. I don't like this. This is embarrassing.
So it's not. It shouldn't be. As you get further into the series, you're going to get better because they're more recent. These are going to be the hardest ones. Your minute starts now.
Okay, so they find out that there is a Chamber of Secrets in the Ministry and Hogwarts. And it is filled with secrets. It's a chamber, which means it's chamber is sort of like a room, you know, that holds things. Help me out here. I don't know where things are. I don't know where Jenny and the
heir
the
of diary, Slytherin.
Oh, the heir of Slytherin.
Mm-hmm.
This crazy snake gets into the school.
Yeah.
And people start becoming petrified. Mm-hmm. And then Hermione figures out how people are starting to become petrified.
Yes.
And why things are the way they are. Uh-huh. Like the one kid with the camera, that's a thing. Looking around the corner with the mirror is also a thing. Like, mm-hmm. And it's if you see the snake, it will freeze you. And one of the ghosts saw a snake and it kind of froze him, but kind of not frozen because he's kind of dead already. And it's really, really weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a snake in the school in the pipes. And he's freezing people because he is from the Chamber of Secrets.
You're not wrong, really. I love that you called him the kid with the camera when you have been so upset by Colin Creevy's death.
It's a lot of pressure to do this right now.
No, the only kind of pretty major thing you forgot about Chamber of Secrets is Tom Riddle, the diary, Tom Riddle's diary and the memory, which turned out to be a horcrux.
This is what I was confusing mm-hmm. with, like, Jenny and being possessed. Was that that book?
That was that book. So
not that long ago?
Yeah. So Jenny, it's her first year of Hogwarts, is Harry's second year of Hogwarts. And, you know, all these kind of crazy things start happening. You know, it's written in blood that... the chamber has been opened. Enemies of the air, beware.
Right. See, now I remember it now that you're giving it to me.
And this is like your Fox the Phoenix introduction in Chamber of Secrets. He comes swooping in the chamber with the hat and the Sword of Gryffindor.
The Basilisk Fang.
There's a callback, lots of callbacks to what happens in that chamber in the last book. Yes. See,
I would have known that that's what chapter it's in.
This is the fun of revisiting some of these things. Okay, what's the third book?
The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Good job. You got it on the first try. Okay, your minute starts now.
There's a guy named Sirius. People think he's crazy. He's dangerous. The ministry's looking for him. He probably is a serial killer. He is not really a serial killer. He's actually part of the Marauders, which is a group of four friends who used to hang out and do mean shit to people and also are kind of shady and smoke weed in Hogsmeade. Well,
okay.
There's a Shrieking Shack.
Yep.
And... there is this situation in which all these friends confront each other again. And we learn that Peter Pettigrew is a rat. And we learn about the Animagus form of people.
Mm-hmm.
And how James and Lupin and Snape and Peter Pettigrew are the Marauders.
Ooh, Snape is not a Marauder.
Not Snape.
but like about as opposite as you can get, really.
But there's the whole lead Snape to a place where we find out that they almost killed him when he was young because they tried to lead him into a place where Lupin was a werewolf.
Yes.
Shrieking Shack, Marauders, werewolf.
Yes. I mean, Shrieking Shack, Marauders, werewolf is a pretty decent summary of Prisoner of Azkaban, really. Yeah, Sirius Black is Harry Potter's godfather. The Godfather. So, yeah, I mean, excellent book, seminal book. A lot of people love the movie, but kind of fuck that movie. What is this one's tricky. What's the fourth book? I say it's tricky because it's tricky to me.
Goblet of Fire?
Yes. Look at that. Not tricky at all. Not phased at all.
This is the Goblet of Fire the same chapter as the Triwizard Tournament?
Yes. The same book?
With the same book?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Triwizard Tournament happened. I'm going to give you that one. Triwizard Tournament happens in Goblet of Fire. This was the longest part of
because
Puffs.
Because the whole Goblet of Fire thing is how you get into the Triwizard Tournament.
Yes. So book four is the longest part of Puffs. It's the longest section. Yeah. It takes up like a third of the play.
Yeah.
All right. Your minute starts now.
There's a tournament between all these different magical schools, but you have to be a certain age to get into it. And Fred and George try to do it, but it gets kicked out because there's this ring around the goblet, and it's a very special goblet. Well, then the goblet spits out a name, and it spits out Harry Potter. And Dumbledore's like, what the fuck? Why did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, Harry?
Very
he's
calmly.
Like, I didn't do it. And he's like, well, I guess we have to listen to the goblet. And so they have this Triwizard Tournament. And so Durmstrang, Bobaton, and someone else come around to the school, and they do like this mermaid shit, and Harry saves the French girl's little sister, and Cedric dies, but his body is brought back through that teleportation situation.
Portkey.
There's a whole Victor Crumb. There's a lot of Hermione, Victor Crumb, makeout sesh. There's some snogging. And there is a mermaid.
There are many mermaids, in fact. Where is it that Cedric dies?
Cedric dies in the graveyard in Little Hangleton.
Because Lord Voldemort comes back
and
at the end
of book four. Doesn't Voldemort also cut off Peter Pettigrew's
hand? Yes. Well, Peter Pettigrew cuts off his own hand, yeah.
And then he like replaces it with some bionic hand or
some
shit.
It's like a silver hand.
This is the
hand.
Ritual with Harry. The blood, yes. The bones, and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is where their two wands connect and make the weird like gold
Priori
thing
that's
kind of brought up back at Deathly Hallows.
Yes. Yeah. See, you're nailing this.
Yeah, little,
you're already four books through out of seven.
Little effing Hangleton.
Yes. What is the fifth book in the Harry Potter series?
Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
No. It's the longest Order book of the series. Yes, the longest book of the series. Order of the Phoenix. Your time starts now.
We learn about Grimmauld Place. We learn about the Order of the Phoenix. The Order is a group of magicians that are fighting against Voldemort and
God
his
damn
people.
It.
We learn about the House of Black.
Mm-hmm.
And the weird tapestry, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff going on, and how the shit's hitting the fan with the Order of the Phoenix. We've learned that Snape is part of the Order of the Phoenix.
Yes.
We learn a little bit about Creature.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they start making a plan of some kind for something. There's a crazy fight between Sirius and Lupin and Snape. Sirius and Lupin? Who gets in the bad fight at the table? At the
at Grimmauld Place, that would be Sirius and Snape.
Sirius and Snape, they mm-hmm. have a wicked fight. It mm-hmm. almost gets, like, physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, like, that's not the book where they do the escape from Grimmauld Place, right?
The escape from Grimmauld Place?
Yeah, where they get Harry to safety.
Oh, so that's, I think you're thinking of the Seven Potters. That's from Privet Drive. That's from the Dursley's house.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, Order of the Phoenix is really, you nailed a lot of it. There's a big battle. Sirius dies at the end of Order of the Phoenix.
Oh, so it is Sirius does die in that book.
Yes, Sirius dies at the end of that book. There's the prophecy is revealed.
Yeah.
Order of the Phoenix. Probably, Order of the Phoenix contains probably one of my top five chapters of the series.
I would say Order of the Phoenix is where things really get complicated with
definitely
the prophecies and how Voldemort sort of like screwed up. He like wrote his own fate through the prophecy.
Yeah.
It could have been anyone. It could have been Neville. This is kind of what opens up the whole Neville variable too.
Yeah. It couldn't have been anyone, but it could have been Neville. It could have been either Neville or Harry.
Harry starts to learn the truth about his fate.
Yes. And there's that excellent chapter in Dumbledore's office that was our very first time doing a two-part episode for one chapter, was that it was after Sirius dies and Harry's in Dumbledore's office and he's like breaking all of his shit.
Yeah.
Remember
Have we gotten to the takeover of the school by the ministry yet? And the decrees?
So Dolores Umbridge is in book five. Okay. So this is why book five is so long.
Yeah, yeah. God.
Dolores Umbridge is also her whole storyline.
We get the sacking of Trelawney.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. Now, what is the next to last book? You've already said it about four times.
Order of the Phoenix Trilogy. Half-Blood Prince.
Half-Blood Prince. Now, this is finally where Half-Blood Prince is. Book six. Your time starts now.
Harry takes a textbook, and it has some weird writing in it, and he starts to try out the potions and starts to wonder who is the Half-Blood Prince.
Is that all that happens?
I don't remember what else is part
There's
of this
There's a really book. Major death at the end of book six.
Dobby.
No.
Fred.
No.
I don't know the book.
Dumbledore, huh?
Dumbledore.
So the other way to...
It would have been better if you would have just said, tell me what the series is, and I probably could have given you the whole plot.
No, that's what... Like, it's fine. You're not being graded. It's okay. The only other major thing that happens in book six is the memories. Dumbledore and Harry start going on this kind of like journey through the memories about Voldemort's history and life. Okay, very final book. Last book, you just read this one, so what's it about? Your time starts now.
Harry, Hermione, Ron, on the hunt for some Horcruxes. The Death Eaters are raising hell. They have this thing going on where if you say Voldemort's name, they can find you and they can come get you. The trio goes camping. Ron gets super pissed and leaves for a time being. At one point, Harry follows this Patronus into the woods and he finds the Sword of Gryffindor, and then Ron shows back up and they destroy one of the Horcruxes, which is the locket. Then they go back to Shell Cottage and something happens and Dobby dies, and there's these three people including Griphook that are looking for them, and there's this confrontation with Griphook about the sword, and there's this giant battle of Hogwarts, and Harry kind of fakes his own death, and Narcissus helps him out, and Neville cuts off the head of a snake, and Grop is still alive, and there is a huge battle, and it is really, really bad, and we forgot to talk about Dumbledore dying in one of the other chapters. Anyway, and Harry dies, and then he doesn't die, and then he, 19 years later, he has some kids, and he names them weird stuff.
No, that's what I was saying is the big death that happens at the end of Half-Blood Prince is Dumbledore. Oh. I just said it, like, 20 seconds ago. Okay. It's
okay. My God. Listen, let me sum up the whole series.
Okay.
There's a magic boy.
Yep.
Him and his granddad go through a lot of stuff. They're in a relationship, and it's complicated.
What?
In the end, his kids end up going to the same school where they have dead horses.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like,
there's just a lot of stuff I missed.
A lot of stuff that happens in the beginning. I think you did excellently. You have to understand, it probably took me 2 or 3 reads of the series before I could confidently tell you, like, book 6 is this one, and this is what it's about. Book 4 is this one, and this is what it's about. So, you know, you remembered so much more than I think it was reasonable to expect yourself to remember. You read it over 3 years.
Well, let's see how much more I remember. Let's keep going.
Okay. I think you did really, really well. So, you know, you probably will have to draw from some of the middle part of your series long summary that you just did. But in your opinion, and this is something I would also like to share my opinion on too, what is the ultimate lesson of this series?
The whole series?
Yeah.
Whoo, buddy.
If you consider it like a fable, and you know, there's always like a moral of the story, like what do you think is kind of the bottom line?
That humans are just as magical as the fantastical characters of all of folklore, and that their magic is the magic of love.
Okay.
And that right or wrong is not a black and white thing, but exists in the choices we make because of our devotion to the people that we love.
I think that's really well put. I like your suggestion that maybe like magic in this series is sort of like a sort of an analogy, or that's not the word I'm looking for, an illusion, maybe, with an A, not an I, illusion, a parallel, some kind of device, right? That it's maybe not a series about magical people so much as it's an allegory. That's the word I'm looking for. Yes. That the magic serves as kind of an allegory for like the magic that's within us all. I think that's a really cool
idea. That's what I lean towards the most.
I like it.
In my own fandom, like, what I love the series for is that it's a reflection of us. And I also love the gray area of life. This is why I'm attracted to theater. So yeah. I love that Snape is a complicated character, and that James is, and that Harry is.
Yeah.
I love that there are no perfect characters in the series. I think that's on purpose. It's like, hey, look at us. Don't look at your character flaws. Look at the magic inside of yourself and make the best decision you can.
I think that's really nice. Yeah, it's a far more interesting story to have three-dimensional people, right? For me, the ultimate lesson of the series, yikes. And I mean, I wrote this question, so I've had time to think about it, and I had a lot of trouble coming up with an answer for this. I mean, yes, I think the ultimate lesson is like, love is the greatest magic there is. Sure, sure, sure. But I mean, I always come back far more to, and you included this in yours as well, this idea that there's really no such thing as destiny. Even though there's this prophecy with Harry, there was like Voldemort chose that to be his path. Like there's really no such thing as like this, you are, it's inevitable, you're destined to go down right. this path. You always have a choice.
This is the whole Back to the Future 3 thing I was talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really like that. I definitely don't think Harry Potter is unique in that moral. I think there are a lot of stories out there that have that moral. But it's a moral that I really like. It's a lesson I really like. Yeah. I don't want things to be predetermined destiny. That's probably one of the reasons I don't tend to like fantasy as a genre, because so much of it is like destiny and ancient legends. And I'm like, yeah, but what about the choices we make every day?
But I think more fantasy is about that very thing than you realize.
You're probably right. Yeah. It's I just need to get past my own mental blocks about it, you know? I think
that will... My goal for you, I'm going to find you some palatable fantasy.
Okay. All right. I like magical realism. That kind of thing.
I like late 70s cubism.
That's, magical realism is like a very common thing. Jesus Christ. My God. So, excellent. I mean, I think we kind of knocked that one out of the park. The next thing I want to talk about is... What does Harry Potter as a series have to say about, and I have like three different things here. So Ooh. What do you think Harry Potter as a series says about fear?
Wow. These are hard-hitting questions. Listen, these are like hot wand quality questions.
You know, I'm just getting us prepped for next week.
So it makes me think about the points where there is fear.
Yeah.
Right? When the kids are young, their fear of opening the Chamber of Secrets, what is going on mm-hmm. behind the scenes, Harry's own fear of death, Malfoy's fear of not owning up to his parents' expectations,
Great.
Dumbledore's fear that he is using this kid, but he's not protecting him, but he's loving him, but maybe what he's doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Snape's fear that he's going to be found out. Voldemort's fear that he's going to fail. Ooh. Hermione's fear that Ron's never going to see her the way that she wants him to see her. There's a lot of fear on a lot of levels. I think really it's you're not doing it alone.
Oh, no. Okay. So when you are feeling afraid...
Know that you're not in it alone. Even when you are physically alone, you're not alone. I mean, this is the whole Patronus thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It doesn't require your best time to happen. It requires your memory and your concentration on it.
I love that. It's this idea that, like, when you're afraid, you have what is needed within you to overcome that fear. So I think what Harry Potter has to say as a series about fear is on to that point. It's maybe not always about overcoming fear so much as it is like making room for fear and even like maybe using fear sometimes to like guide healthy decision making.
Changing your relationship to it.
Yeah, changing your relationship to it. And it makes me think a lot about the biological like underpinnings of anxiety. Like what anxiety as a state is rooted in our very primitive fight or flight system, which... We cannot survive as a species without that system. We need it. Fear is healthy. A certain type of fear and a certain amount is healthy. But sometimes it can get out of hand, you know? So all that comes to mind for me is the lead up, the beginning of the chapter, The Forest, again, when Harry's thinking about, why have I never realized how miraculous my body is before? And like when he's starting to realize all these things he's taken for granted in for the 17 years he's been alive because he's about to march to his death. But also like how afraid he is and how he just keeps going anyway.
Yeah.
Because it has to be done. And Neville too.
You think about the very beginning of the series when... Dumbledore awards points to the house, like 50 points to the house because of Neville. Mm-hmm. You know, it's even harder to stand up to your friends.
Yes.
Like, he was afraid of not being accepted, but he still was like, hey guys, this is bullshit. This is not a good idea.
Yes.
And then I love that it comes full circle in the last book, and it's Neville, the one that steps up again and is like, I don't give a damn, let's go.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Neville and the Golden Trio... And admittedly, Dumbledore himself, most of the protagonists in this series all belong in Gryffindor House. And the defining trait of Gryffindor House, as much shit as I talk about Gryffindor showy bastards, right? Yeah. Their defining trait is bravery. And what is bravery if not feeling fear, acknowledging fear, and not letting fear stop you from doing X, right? So I think that's what Harry Potter as a series has to say about fear. What do you think? I think we've already spoken about what Harry Potter has to say about love, so I'm going to skip that one. But what do you think Harry Potter as a series has to say about hope?
Ooh.
Do you want to take a break?
Yeah, can we?
Yeah. You can readjust that mic, too.
To do what?
To go, like, further this way. Like, anything that would help your neck. I mean, there's a ton of ways you can move. Okay. So our next question is, what does... I'm going to wait until you stop yawning. That's great. Thanks. Thanks for that. What does Harry Potter as a series have to say about hope?
Specifically, Bob Hope.
Not Bob Hope, no.
I believe it was Emily Dickinson who said, hope is a thing with feathers.
Oh, okay. I don't know what that means. Yes. What does that mean, Emily
Dickinson? We'll put it in the show notes. Oh my God, don't you even read the show notes? We need to make stickers that say, don't you even read the show notes.
Really going to try and catch up at least somewhat on the show notes during our break.
I think simply, if your heart is in the right place, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what you're going to look into.
So if your intentions are good, there's always hope.
Yes.
Even when things are really dark. I think that's a really nice message. I like that. Because, yeah, I mean, intention is about choice. And we were just talking about how Harry Potter has so much to do with, like, the choices you make and nothing is destiny and all of that. Yeah. I mean, it's... I'm probably not going to get this quote word for word, but there's a great quote about hope from the Harry Potter series. Hope can always be found in the darkest of times as long as one remembers to turn on the light.
Right.
Right. Which, again, is very intentional, right? Like you. So to me, I'll take that one step further and say that a very important lesson of Harry Potter is to choose hope. As cheesy as that might sound, you know, that you do have a choice to have hope or to not have hope.
But the light has to be turned on.
Right, but you have to choose to turn it on, I think, is the message of that quote.
You're choosing to turn me on right now.
Okay, all right.
Fox and the Foxhound After Dark.
Jesus Christ. I was expecting a nice deep discussion, and instead I'm getting Bob Hope and sex jokes. That's fun. That's good. And
you just said deep discussion.
Jesus Christ. So, yeah, I mean, nothing more to really say. Clearly. So what do you think makes Harry Potter different than other hero's journey tales?
Ooh, that's a very good question.
Thank you. Because a lot of people like to, we've talked about this.
There are no new stories. It's just like every other movie.
Harry Potter's just like Star Wars. Harry Potter's just a ripoff of XYZ.
And everything's a ripoff of the Greek gods.
It's the hero's journey, dude. Like it's a template. But what do you think sets Harry Potter apart from, say, Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or any other hero's journey tale?
It really keeps boiling down to me. To me, it really keeps boiling down to relationships.
Yeah.
And yeah, the relationships in this book are everything.
Definitely. I like that. Because Harry, God, I mean, he probably would have died year one without Hermione. And Ron saves his ass more than once.
And I also don't know if I would feel the same way I feel about Harry had I not looked at Harry through all these other characters' eyes.
Oh, that's a really... And which is interesting.
If I look at Harry through Vernon's eyes,
yeah,
I see a pest and a freeloader and a burden on my family.
Yeah.
If I look at Harry through Petunia's eyes, it gets a little bit more complex because I'm seeing my sister in this boy, even though I'm also seeing him as a burden.
Yeah.
He also is a token for my abusive husband's anger and rage.
Very interesting.
Harry through Hermione's eyes. She believes in Harry more than she even believes in herself.
Yeah.
Even though she is as good as a wizard as Harry or anyone else.
Yeah.
You look at the relationship between Harry and Ron. I love that because it's this male friendship that's fraught with competition and jealousy and anger and camaraderie. And it takes a long time for Ron and Harry to get older and start breaking down the levels of vulnerability, of how vulnerable they're Definitely. Willing to get with each other.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So what you just said to me, I completely agree with you. I find it really interesting that we both see what you're describing in this series that is told literally only from Harry's perspective. If Harry's not in the room, we don't know what happens, with a couple of exceptions, like the other minister and the opening, not the opening chapter, but the chapter with Charity Burbage and stuff in Deathly Hallows. So what I'll say I think is different. Now, granted, I am not terribly well-read. I'm sure this is not the only example of this. But to me, what's different from other hero's journey tales that I have consumed personally is I think it's very common for the hero's journey to be told from this kind of truly like very objective viewpoint. And even though Harry Potter's not told from a first person perspective, we still have insight into Harry's thoughts and feelings and intentions, and only Harry's thoughts, feelings, and intentions. We don't have insight into other characters' thoughts, feelings, and intentions, which makes it really interesting that the relationships are so important, and that what you're describing about like the perspective of seeing Harry, like we can clearly see the perspective, even though we don't have as a reader that insight into Petunia's mind, for example.
Yeah.
But we see that perspective in her words and in her actions, which again circles back to the importance of our words and actions, right? Because we do kind of bear our souls in it, I think. So.
And I love the complex nature of characters like Sirius Black and Severus Snape and Albus Dumbledore.
Definitely.
How we can have endless debates about, was this a puppet master? Was this a good person? How could you name your son after Severus? Yeah. What do you mean? Why wouldn't he name his son after Severus?
Right.
That's what's so good. That's the meat of it to me. The whole plot of they did this and this and this, and they went to a cave and they found this, and there was a dragon, there was a war, and there was that. That's great, but it's a framework for what I really love, which is these little micro relationships throughout the series. The Marauders, their friendship.
Yeah.
James and Severus. Severus and Lily.
Yeah.
That relationship.
So what you're reminding me of is another thing that I really like about the series. And listen, I'm sure there are people out there that would disagree with me, and that's fine. Like, we can disagree. But in my view, in my opinion, Harry Potter manages to sidestep a lot of tropes that other hero's journey tales fall into. Not necessarily with the plot, because like you said, I mean, it's like, it's not really about the plot. That's what defines a hero's journey tale. But in terms of like, there's really not a ton of like tokenism in Harry Potter, right? There's not like the token, like bumbling idiot, and the like, you don't get these kind of archetypes that I think pop up.
But you still get to have witches, wizards, elves, goblins, giants, ghost.
That's the other thing.
Monsters. Yeah. All of this type of stuff. Werewolves.
Werewolves, yes.
Yeah,
werewolves.
Those two. Those two.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that you put it very beautifully.
I'm starting to really like this series the more you talk about it.
Now, this is one that I'm really curious about what your answer is going to be. I don't have to answer this because everyone knows my answer to this. But after reading the whole series, you've consumed the whole series now, who has emerged as your favorite character?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I don't even know what I don't even know what favorite means to me.
I know. It's a hard thing to define.
It's like, is it the character that you couldn't do without? If somebody put a gun to your head and said one character has to just be eliminated from the series,
and like their entire presence is eliminated,
the
one
you think is the coolest and the most fun, and
I feel like favorite character. Yeah, I mean, it can mean a lot of different things to me. If my favorite character in any kind of media is usually just the one that I'm like drawn to the most, either because like they interest me the most.
Simply, my absolute favorite character is Hagrid.
Oh, such a good answer. Yeah, but
the character that I've thought about the most
mm-hmm.
is Draco.
Yeah, yeah.
The character that really solidified why I love the series is Snape.
Interesting. Oh, I can't wait to do character deep dives when we get a little further into season 8.
Yeah.
To really dissect some of those. Do you feel like you were satisfied with the direction Draco went? Because I think it was about like Order of the Phoenix. You were saying like, shit or get off the pot with this character. Like I'm done with this one dimensional, you know, kind of guy.
I mean, I guess I was kind of foolishly hoping for some sort of redemption. What I got, well, this is one of those things that sets this series apart too. What I got was not in the packaging I thought it would get.
Interesting. You thought you were going to see this like pretty typical arc, villain arc that's redeemed at the end. Yeah.
The redemption of Malfoy is not him coming around or being, I'm trying to think of the word.
Exonerated or...
It's not about Draco changing.
Oh, right.
Right? That's kind of what I had in my head. Oh, there's goodness inside Draco. What really, the form that I got Draco's redemption, quote unquote, in mm-hmm. was how much his mother loves him.
Oh, God.
That's the gut punch.
You're going to make me cry.
Because you're watching this kid and you're like, oh, man, surely he has some redeeming factor about him. Look, he doesn't really want to kill Dumbledore. Oh, my God, he's kind of scared. Mm-hmm. You see Harry save him. And when after he's saved and Crab has died, is it Crab that dies, right?
I think so. God, I always forget if it's Crab or Goyle. I think it's Crab. Yeah.
And then they land in the hallway.
Yeah.
And Draco has a perfect opportunity to fight Harry, but he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
He totally, in my opinion, knows that that's Harry when his face has been disfigured. I completely
agree. Yeah.
You know, and he says, it doesn't look like him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Those little things make you think, wow, there's like some humanity in Draco.
Yeah. But
the thing that really floored me was Narcissa lying to Voldemort about Harry being dead because she just wanted to get to her son.
It's a beautiful, beautiful point. I really like everything that you just said. I think that's so true. There could have been a whole lot of other cheesy ways that Draco's story could have gone and yeah. could have ended, and a whole lot more like tropey ways that it could have ended. But instead, it kind of took what I think is a more realistic and ultimately more interesting route, which is that Draco never really stops succumbing to the pressure of his environment and the pressure of his family. But like, it's really hard to do that. It's really hard to like stand in Malfoy Manor and make some grander gesture. Like for Draco, the best he can do in that moment realistically is go, I'm not sure. You know, he doesn't say, no, definitely not Harry. But he also doesn't make some kind of monologue about how, what are we doing? And like, you know, it could have gone so much cheesier.
Yeah. When Narcissa walks up and checks Harry and she can feel him breathing
mm-hmm.
and she lifts his eyelid and sees that he's alive and 100% knows this kid's alive. And she says, and she whispers to him, you know, like, where's my kid? Mm-hmm. Is he okay? And Harry says, yeah, he's in the school or whatever. Or he just says, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, he's definitely dead. At that moment, I'm seeing Draco as Paris's age.
Stop.
I'm seeing Draco as a 3-year-old and his mom reading him a bedtime story.
Stop it.
I'm seeing Draco learn, get older and lose his innocence and start to form an ego and self-consciousness and dealing with whatever emotional trauma his parents put him through.
Yeah.
But yet they still loved him.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. It's like when you talk about love and you talk about ancient magic, it's not clean. It's not safe.
No.
It's dirty and nuanced and scary and powerful, which is what magic is.
Yeah.
That could almost be the gist of the whole series is that love is ancient magic, but magic can be really dangerous.
And really messy.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely beautifully put. Like
that Snape was so devoted to a girl that he was in love with years ago, like over a decade ago at the beginning of the story. By the time we get to the end, it's been, you know, well over 20 years ago, I guess, right?
Yeah.
That he was in love with this girl. She's been dead this whole time.
Mm.
He didn't get her when she was alive. He's not going to get her now because she's dead. She ended up marrying the guy that he fucking hated more than anyone, but he still loves her so much that it's enough to keep him just on this side of the dark side, enough to protect Harry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's compelling.
Yeah.
I have so much to say about Snape, but I'll save it for another time. I will say, on the note of Draco, this is one of the very few things that I like about the final, like, third of Deathly Hallows Part 2, is there are some really cool moments with the Malfoys, and I don't know if you caught them only because, like, you were so understandably and justifiably incensed by, like, what else was happening in the final third of that movie. But there's a really, really great shot of Draco where, when Voldemort has come to the castle and everyone still thinks that Harry's dead, and I think it's Lucius who's like, "Draco, get over here," because Draco's standing with the other students. And there's just this shot of him, and he's just like, his chin is quivering, and he just looks so despondent. And it's, I mean, it's a really beautiful moment of acting from Tom Felton. Yeah. And then there's this other moment, which is kind of off script from the books, but I don't mind it, where in the melee of everything, when they realize, oh shit, Harry's still alive, and the battle starts breaking out, where Lucius and Narcissa and Draco just kind of quietly run away. They run away from Hogwarts. They just leave. And I kind of love that.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of, because, you know, I think they just go, fuck, this is our opportunity. And the three of us, this is what matters.
Yeah.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Ooh, can't wait for our Draco deep dive.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a good one for sure. Excellent. So our final question before we do our Foxy Awards, or Foz, as it were. Foz. Foz. La 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 la. So even before the author completely lost her mind, the series was not without controversy. Mainly, there's a lot of suggestions of, you know, not great representations of groups of people being, like, kind of wink, wink. There's a lot of, like, dog whistling. There were some allegations of some dog whistling
in the series. People say this a lot about the goblins in the Jewish community.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a really clear example, right? So kind of in the framework of social justice and in the framework of equity, things like that, if Harry Potter was set in 2022 and perhaps written by someone else, what is one thing that you would hope would be different, or that you would want to be different? Kind of magic wand scenario, right? If you changed one thing. Now, it can be a big aspect that stretches across the series. It could be one event. Totally up to you.
More expansion of the female character's viewpoint of what's going on.
Oh, I love that. I think that's great. And I'll tack on to that just more overt diversity, written about descriptive diversity, not just racial diversity, that's a big part of it, but also diversity in terms of gender identities, diversity in terms of sexuality. You know, it's all very white, hetero, like, it's, I mean, you know. So I would love to see that, because I think there are some really, really incredible members of this fandom who have been able to overcome a lack of seeing overt representation in the series, and have found representation, you know, in what's unsaid, right, or whatever. But I would love for other groups to have their moment with the series, to go, this person is described and they sound just like my sister, or they, you know, like, to see an actual,
there are so many overt moms in this book, and we don't get the expansion of their story. We get a lot of Molly Weasley, but we don't get a lot of her viewpoint.
That's a good point.
Lily's backstory, Narcissa as a mom,
then
Tonks becomes a mom,
right? We don't see any of that or hear about any of that, right? Excellent. Well, I think we should just write the next Harry Potter series.
I'm working on it right now.
Okay, good. It's time for the Foxy Awards.
I thought you were about to say, It's time to change your stinky little butt.
Which is what we sing to our baby every time she has a diaper change.
Yes.
Most especially in the morning. It's time to change your stinky little butt. And then we have stinky. And then Kevin usually adds some flourishes to that.
Of course.
We have like a whole thing. We have many songs in this
poor
house.
Poor child.
Poor thing. She loves it. It's time for the Foxy Awards. Insert orchestral overture music here. Our first category, we will each have one vote for this. Best character arc.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Sirius Black.
Interesting. I like it. Ooh, I like it. All right. Best character arc for me, I'm going to go Percy Weasley.
Ooh. I thought he was under the Imperius curse.
You sure did. I love his redemption. I'm gonna leave it at that. Next category, ultimate hero of the series.
Neville effing Longbottom.
If you answer anyone other than Neville fucking Longbottom,
you can GTFO.
You are wrong, and you can get the fuck out. It's Neville motherfucking Longbottom. It's
Neville or death.
Neville or death, yes. Next category, most overrated character.
Ooh. Most overrated. Man, this is like, I'm going to end up hurting some feelings with this. No matter what I come up with.
This is the beauty of art though, right? If you consume art, yeah, you're going to have differing opinions.
Art that's about other art. You can see me thinking of every single character in the series right now. I
know. Most overrated character.
Voldemort?
He's
kind of an idiot.
He's not terribly intimidating because he's so dumb. But ultimately, that's kind of the beauty of it, though, is that like it's his own fucking dumbness
that
brings him down.
I really like him.
Most overrated character? I'm going to say Dumbledore. I don't even really want to like qualify that. It's just my first instinct. And we will be doing an entire episode on Dumbledore, I promise you. So subscribe now.
I like one of my favorite parts of the Harry Potter series is where Snape is talking to Harry about Dumbledore. And he says, whacking the ball. There's one more thing I get left out of. God.
Jesus Christ. Now, flip side of that coin, most underrated character in the series.
Underrated.
Maybe doesn't get enough praise from the fandom, or maybe isn't in the book series as much as you think they should be.
Featured as much as they should be?
Yeah.
Jenny.
Oh, I like that answer.
Jenny Weasley.
Jenny's a badass. I would love to see like some supplemental materials that are solely focused on Jenny. Yeah, very good. My most underrated character, listen, Fleur Delacour.
Love Fleur.
I love her. She's so underrated. She's so shit talked about in the fandom.
She's also underrated by the other characters in the book. So the Weasleys are like, eye roll.
Double meaning, exactly.
Yeah.
Double meaning. I think Fleur is a badass, tough, really smart, confident person.
She's a French girl.
She's amazing. Like, she's incredible. To me, Fleur is absolutely the most underrated character. Best book of the series.
Ooh.
And I mean, we could go deep into the analysis of this, but
to me, it's going to be a tie between, as far as my favorite, Order of the Phoenix is really good.
I love Order of the Phoenix.
I almost like, literature-wise, I almost want to say Order of the Phoenix.
Okay.
Personal-wise, it's a toss-up between Half-Blood Prince and Deathly Hallows.
Ooh.
Probably Half-Blood Prince.
Half-Blood Prince was going to be my answer as well. I think Half-Blood Prince is, in my opinion, my humble opinion, unequivocally the best book of the series from beginning to end.
It really takes a turn of like what this series is going to be.
Definitely.
Okay, so you didn't just shit us around for four books. there's some meat on the bone here.
Definitely. Yeah. I think Half-Blood Prince is this really perfect balance of darkness and like twisted humor. And it's the first time you're really seeing the kids start growing up and it's like having relationships. It's, you know, we have these memories with Tom Riddle. Like there's some really like creepy shit in Half-Blood Prince that's like super effective. But it's also, it's never lighthearted, but it's also like really cheeky as a book, I feel like.
Cheekier than Nando's.
It's cheekier than Nando's. I think Half-Blood Prince, definitely best book of the series. Best movie adaptation of the series.
Ooh, buddy. Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Agree. Hard agree. Deathly Hallows Part 1. If you're going by like most faithful to the part of the book it's covering... Definitely. I also just think it's an enjoyable as fuck movie.
Most polarizing? Prisoner of Azkaban.
Definitely. Because, I mean, that's a almost universally beloved movie. And I think it's a terrible representation of the book.
Yeah.
And as a standalone, you know, piece of medium, whatever, it's confusing because of the things that they choose to leave out. Just, ugh. Best couple.
Ooh. Would it be mean to say Lily and Snape? Hello.
Hello. I don't know if mean Winky is the right word. Winky and Dobby, word.
Hello.
I don't know if mean is the right answer so best much as couple. Wrong would be the best word to describe that.
You could even say Hagrid and his dog, Dumbledore and Fox. Like there's a lot of relationships.
Relationships don't have to just be romantic. Yeah. So we could say like best pairing, best relationship. Let's expand it that way.
My personal favorite, Harry and Hermione.
Oh, so you're going with like shipping. Oh no, you're not shipping them. You're just saying their dynamic as friends.
Yeah. Are you asking for best couple who's actually together?
No, I like your definition better. That was initially what was in my head, but I like your definition better.
Let's do both.
Okay, so what about your best ship?
Non-romantic, Harry and Hermione. I love their relationship.
I do too.
Best romantic relationship? I wish we would have got a lot more Tonks and Remus.
Same,
but
yeah.
But we didn't. So,
we don't really know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hagrid and Madame Maxime.
Oh, God.
My favorite couple.
Fucking all time. We get so little of them, and it's so impactful, and they're just so adorable. Ooh, that's a tough contender. It's not my answer, but it's a tough contender. So I'll say best romantic couple. I'm going to go Arthur and Molly Weasley.
Oh,
I just think they're wonderful. I think they're not without flaws as characters. I think they have, you know, like Arthur's a little weirdly fetishizing about muggles, and Molly has the whole, like, I will never forgive her for like the Easter egg thing where she like reads the thing in Witch Weekly about Hermione and like sends her a little tiny Easter. Blech, I hate it.
Yeah.
But as a couple, I love them. And as characters individually, I overall love them. Arthur and Molly Weasley. So for me, non-romantic or platonic or whatever you want to call it, relationship, I'm going to say, because it depends on how are we saying most interesting? Are we saying healthiest?
Your favorite.
Favorite. I really love the friendship between Ginny and Luna.
Oh, that is pretty cool.
Which we don't see explored a ton, but I just think, you know, Ginny's kind of one of the first people who really speaks up for Luna and advocates for her, even though Luna doesn't give a fuck what anybody thinks about her anyway.
Yeah.
I just think they're a really cool, like, fire and ice kind of
What about combo. Sirius Black and Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Which only exists in your head, but okay. Now, how about, same question, romantic and non-romantic, worst pairings?
Worst pairings. Okay, fuck. Worst Hagrid and Aragog. What is this? What is this?
It's not a great relationship.
I don't wonder. It's like they're in a relationship and it's really complicated.
Yeah, yeah. Aragog's like, I'll make sure my children don't eat you, but your friends, yeah, they're fucked.
That's that's the worst platonic relationship. The worst actual relationship, James and I'm just kidding.
How dare
you? I'm just kidding. I actually kind of liked Hermione and Victor, by the way.
Oh, same.
God forgive me, Ron, for saying that.
Same.
Let me see which one I hate.
And I mean, you don't have to hate the pairing. Like, you can just think it's the worst one of the series. It's the worst. Like, yeah, I mean, like, it's all relative. Like, you still think it's okay. It's just not your favorite of the series.
Malfoy and Narcissa.
Lucius and Narcissa.
I mean, Lucius and Narcissa.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird, cold relationship.
I feel like she would be a better person without him.
Oh, I completely agree. I think you're absolutely right.
Do you see Lucius coming after trying to find his boy? Not the same way you do Narcissa.
I think you see some of it in that chapter, yeah. But you not the same. Like, do you think he would have lied to Voldemort to say, absolutely not. Narcissa did. Lucius never would have, in my opinion. Great, great choice. So for me, worst pairing platonically, I'm going to say Dumbledore and Snape. I think they have a really fraught, weird, manipulative.
Like, both of their lives would have been better had they never met.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of, like, Dumbledore holding shit over Snape's head. As much as I hate Snape, like, I don't think anyone deserves that for as many years as he had it. And there's a whole lot of, like, Snape being, like, whiny to Dumbledore. It's just not good. It's not a good relationship. Romantically, I don't love Ron and Hermione.
Really? Yeah.
I don't love Ron and Hermione. I get it. Again, it's all relative, right? I don't think it's a terrible idea relationship. I don't think it's a bad relationship. It's just like my least favorite of the series, probably.
Yeah, there's no time that I was like, I wasn't really super rooting for it that much.
I feel like it's just out of convenience.
I'll tell you a horrible platonic relationship.
What?
Fucking Albus and his brother.
Ooh, Albus and Aberforth. Hey. Ooh, that's a complicated relationship. Ew. And, you know.
Ariana Grande, R.I.P.
You'll get a little bit more of that in the Fantastic Beasts trilogy, which I don't know if it's going to stay a trilogy or not. They were going to make the fourth and fifth movies based on how well the third movie did, and it did not do well.
Oh, God.
So I don't know if there will be a fourth and fifth. Well, congratulations to all of our winners of the FAWs. May the FAW be with you. That's awful. I'm so sorry. So that was our, as close as we could come to a succinct discussion of the series as a whole. But rest assured, if we didn't cover a topic that is close to your heart, that's what we're doing moving forward, is we're going to start deep diving on relationships and specific characters and themes throughout the series. This is basically, consider this your little taster.
A primer, if you will.
A primer also, of what remains. Hey,
listen, we're baby birds. Feed us.
Feed us. Give it to us.
If you want an entire episode about something,
tell us.
Let us know.
Let us know. The reason we're opening season 8 with Harry Potter headcanons and origin stories, which are submitted by you, the listener, is because that was suggested to us by two separate listeners, and we decided to combine it into one episode. And it's our goddamn premiere, right? We also still are going to cover Fantastic Beasts. Don't worry, I'm going to make Kevin read Cursed Child.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We're still going to cover the remaining, like, officially licensed stuff, as well as a whole bunch of unlicensed stuff. So there's a lot of fun to come. But the most fun is going to be next week with Hot Wands. God help us. So any parting words for our listeners while we mentally prepare for the challenge that awaits us 1 week from now?
I just would like to ask the Foxies to, I would like to thank them for their support and to stick with me in my further exploration of this series.
Yeah. Although I think the Foxies, I'm going to speak for the Foxies, are incredibly moved by your insight into the series over these 3 years. And your insight just tonight in talking about the series as a whole. There's something really, really great about having these discussions with someone who has just consumed the series for the first time. It's not what you usually get as a member of this fandom.
And it had zero to do with my childhood.
Right.
I was already an adult when this shit started coming out.
But it's really, it's so... What's happened for me in reading this series together with you is that there have been a lot of opinions I've always had about this series that I have felt like were set in concrete and just keep getting further set and keep getting further set every time I consume this series because it's going through the same lens every time, my own, right?
Yeah.
So I just reinforce my own beliefs and I reinforce the things that I love and don't love and blah, blah, blah. But going through this with you, who's the person I'm closest with on the whole planet, and seeing your differing perspectives about things, you've loosened a lot of my opinions in the series. And that's why this is such a cool take from you, right? Like, this is why this is a good idea. This is why I'm so happy we decided to do this.
Yeah. And it's not what I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is absolutely not what I thought it was.
Yeah. So I that was kind of going to be one of my final questions. And then I will reveal from Senia who are all series long winners and losers were. That'll be how we close the episode. But I was going to tell you, if you can remember back to before you read the series, in terms of like a resolution, like I know that you knew it was about like a wizard boy, right? But like, what did you think the series was about, or how did you think it ended? I mean, what did you think it was made up of?
Well, one, I thought it was a little bit more silly and zany,
mm-hmm.
like a little bit wackier.
Okay.
Especially based on the illustrations, like a boy on a broom, and it's very fantastical. Like, I thought it would be a little bit more kid-friendly
mm-hmm.
and not so dark and not so serious.
Yeah. Oh, I think it gets so much darker, yeah. I think, than you expect. So while I'm pulling the results from Senia's analysis of all of our winners and losers over the course of the series, who do you think was like the ultimate winner for you specifically? Who do you think you gave winner to the most?
Oh man, I don't even, it's like I can't even begin to think. I think maybe I gave it to Hermione the most.
You did. You gave Hermione winner the most times over the course of the series. Now, as a reminder, we haven't done winners and losers for every single book. We started doing it somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
At the suggestion of Ben.
Ben Clark. Actually,
Ben Clark. Who do you think I gave winner to the most?
Probably Ron.
I gave it to Harry the most, actually. Our protagonist.
Parents.
How boring of me. Yes.
I know. He's like the main guy.
Bro. Now, who do you think I gave loser to the most over the course of the series?
Probably Snape.
I gave it to Voldemort. Again, ooh. How boring of me. I'm such a basic bitch. Who did you give loser to the most?
Probably Dumbledore.
Harry James Potter.
Oh, God, forgive me.
Yikes.
He's like the main character.
Yikes. And our series-long winners and losers, so if you combine both of us as one vote, who do you think that we both collectively gave winner to the most?
Hermione.
Hermione was our ultimate winner, yes.
Yeah.
And who do you think was our loser?
Voldemort.
Voldemort is correct. Although Dumbledore was not terribly far behind, Voldemort was our ultimate loser. You lose, Voldemort. Okay. We will be
Finish him. Friendship.
Mortal Kombat. We will be back next week to burn our taste buds off. You'll have the audio version of that dropping as a regular episode, but there will also be video of us burning off our faces and the insides of our mouths for Hot Wands. Please pray for us. Send white light into the universe, whatever you do to send good vibes. Please do it.
Or send us horse pants.
Horse pants. We might need horse pants. I personally will have a milkshake handy that I will.
Do you know the section? Here's a piece of trivia for you, Fox and the Foxhound trivia.
Okay.
What event, tell me when in the series, what made us start talking about horse pants?
Let me think. It had to be the centaurs. So it had to be something involving the centaurs. This was Firenze coming on to teach divination.
Exactly.
Book five.
And his classroom looked like the woods where he lived.
And you were, I think it came about because you were saying, like, he's just naked in school. Like, he has to wear pants.
Big old horse dong flapping around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a lot of talk about a horse dong. You were really fixated on that. That was, look at this. Memory like an elephant. Do elephants actually have good memories? Is that a thing? Is that just an urban legend? We will talk to you next week.
What kind of beer do spiders drink?
What kind?
Aragrog.
Ew, that's terrible. How dare you?
We're bringing back dad jokes.
No, we're not.